Blog Talk Radio.
A song for the righteous, and that's our intent, to encourage righteousness, because right now we're on Blog Talk Radio, and you happen to be listening to what we humbly assert to be the higher inner frequency of Blog Talk Radio, because of Soul Class, or Soul Talk, Soul Talk program presentation number 801, Proverbs Teachings to Access Wisdom and Righteousness, presentation number 24. Blessed is our eternal creator, Baruch Hashem, Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human family condition. With the Creator's help, our next broadcast is taking place right now on December 10th, 2023 at 11:32 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Turtle Island, equals a.k.a. the USA Unified Soul Actualization. An essential topic for discussion will be sharing the written and oral traditions from King Solomon's Proverbs, one of the most powerful teachings from the Israelite Tanakh prophet's holy writings. If you want to try to make the program a little bit more organic, call the number is 563-999-3688. That's 563-999-3688. Meanwhile, may the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. The tags for today's program are Eternal Creator, Divine Image, Universal Redemption, Children of Israel, Working with Children of Noah to Eliminate Hatred, Jealousy, and Competition from This Blessed Earth, Torah Traditions of Israel, Oral and Written Traditions. And as we go to our dashboard, interesting news, Jamaica now is now in second place for the most listeners that we have at 3.17%. America still is the dominant region in the world, where 85.71% of our listeners are coming from, followed by the Holy Land of Israel, 2.38%. And then there's a tie with Israel for the next two positions, Canada 2.38% and Australia 2.38%, and that's pretty interesting. And also to mention, on the world population clock, we're up to almost 8,100,000,000 people. Today, unfortunately, 80,000 people have passed on, and being born today is over 177,000. So another week we see there's this constant in the creation, that for every person who passes on to the next level of life, there are two people being born. And with that being said, we're going to segue out of today's opening song by Avi Ben Israel, called, again, Shir LaTzadikim, Song for the Righteous. And let's start on with the shoe. Thank you very much, Avi Ben Israel. And joining me today, as regular as you can be and as right as the rain, we have from New York City, Dennis Ryan, who is our Rambam teacher, activist, and advocate for dispersing of the teachings of the great Nesher, the great eagle, Rambam, Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon, Maimonides. Good morning, Dennis. Dennis? Dennis. Oh, no. More technical difficulty? Okay, let's see. He's on hold. I'm bringing back into the studio. Don Glow's applying. Dennis, can you hear me?
Hello, hello.
Hi, hi. There was a break in the action. Your microphone was on, but I didn't hear you. How you doing, Dennis?
Fine. Yourself?
Well, thank God I'm here today, and I want to share a little experience that happened to me since Thursday morning. Now, for those who have been listening to the program, have noticed that I mentioned from time to time a seminal book actually preceded Rambam, the Rabbeinu Bechaya Ibn Pekuda, who lived in España, which is called Spain as we know it today. And there's a section of his very famous book called Chovos Levovos, Duties of the Heart, and a section is called, and it's divided up into different gates. This is the gate of trust. And I was telling a work peer on Thursday morning that I've been learning it, and I've been dealing with my tests and not getting angry. And that's one of the principal affirmations that one is working one's trust, because one can see that although something is not necessarily pleasant any one moment, whatever one's experiencing, whatever that may be, and we only experience pleasant experiences, that we still have to see that there's a certain goodness that's tucked within that feeling of discomfort. And from the moment that I told him that, I had a series of events leading up through from Thursday, Friday, and then yesterday, Shabbos morning. Today it's been a little quiet, thank God. And what was that I had taken keys to work in order to open up to a certain apartment. I'm involved in social services, and I missed the keys. I lost the keys. I misplaced them. And I was, you know, distressed but not angry. And then finally I looked down into the pocket of my shirt, and there they were, dangling right in front of my nose. Then later that day, I went to pick up a menorah for a client who needed one for lighting the menorah. You know, some of our clients, they're not capable of lighting one with fire, so they light one that's with electricity, symbolically representing, you know, how a little bit of light pushes away a lot of darkness. And I lost my wallet. So what happened was, I went to a supermarket to buy some apple juice for a community meeting, and I didn't have my credit card on me, so I had to walk out kind of like shamefaced with, you know, my head down, and there was a woman who was asking for charity outside, and I said, listen, if I find it, I'll come back and I'll give you some money. So what happened is I went to my office, and there it was. What happened was earlier, after I had that discussion with my peer, I left in error, and I forgot that I left my wallet right on my desk in my office. So I picked it up, went out, bought the two apple juices, and then I went to visit her. And there was also a Hanukkah party at my office, and I ate some raw sushi. Uh-oh. As Dennis said, he didn't think kosher food was that bad, but raw sushi did a job on me. And from 9 p.m. to 3 a.m., I was very sick, and I couldn't get to sleep, and I had to take off from work on Friday. And thank God when I woke up, I actually thought I was going to have to go to the hospital. I thought it was kidney failure. I thought it was a kidney stone. The last time I felt such pain in that part of my body was, I think, on the other side with my appendix that was almost exploded and was taken out in 1986. Then the cherry on top of all was yesterday morning. I went to shut the door to my bedroom where my wife was sleeping to give her some privacy. And she got locked from the inside. So thank God there was like a little space underneath the bedroom door where I could pass her the kitchen knife and she could open up the door. So I said to myself, you know what, I think that I shouldn't have told my peer that I was, you know, having some success, not getting upset with my trust in God. Better this is something that I have to work up between the Creator and I. So Dennis, your take on that maybe in the eyes of heaven I was being a little boastful and saying, oh, you think you have true trust? We'll see how much you trust in God. Any take on these matters?
Yes, we're always being put to the test, Don, every one of us. Why? Because God, our Creator, wants to know how we behave. But God is as in he has no ending, he has no beginning. He is always with us. He's a constant. He does not change. We have ups and downs. Our Creator doesn't. But our Creator is with us at all times. And if you can't control your emotions, as Maimonides would say, then you're in for a little trouble, because then you start questioning whether God is with you. He's with you at good times and bad times. He wants to see how you behave under both conditions, because he's interested in you. He loves you, and he's willing to forget or forgive any sin you may commit, as long as you return to the purity of your heart. So when we doubt, based on our feelings, whether God meant this to happen or maybe he didn't, it's not a question of that at all. The Creator is always with us. It's our faith that goes up and down. The Creator doesn't waver one inch to the positive or negative. We have our ups and downs. Don't use the Creator as an excuse. We are all responsible for our own situations, and you must live through it. Trust in God. He is with you.
Thank you, Dennis. So I'd like to now segue to some teaching from the Brigade of Trust by Rabbeinu Bechaya Ibn Pakur, excuse me. And this is teachings from over 1,000 years ago, but I think that people can find something in the 21st century that is relatable, because it's dealing with matters of looking within oneself and knowing and acknowledging who is really running the show. So we understand that the Creator is all-knowing and invincible. And this is testifiable from a prophecy in the book of Job, we say in Hebrew, Eov, chapter 9, verse 4. He is wise in heart and mighty in strength. And who, as a human being, has hardened his or her heart against him and remained whole? Meaning we can't harden our heart against Creator and think that we can reject his wisdom. We can deny his strength. And it says also in Chronicles chapter 1, the first book of Chronicles, chapter 29, verse 11, that he is wise in heart. I'm sorry, we read that already. Yours, O Creator, is the greatness, the might, the glory, and the victory. And also there's a prophecy in the book of Zephaniah in Hebrew, chapter 3, verse 17. The Lord is in your midst, a mighty one who will save. So Dennis, how can we convince another human being, or just evidence them, or to test her, or just have a talk over a cup of coffee? The Creator knows everything, and Creator is wise in heart, but not in the way that we picture the human heart. There's a celestial heart, and there's a celestial strength, and no one who hardens their heart against the Creator can win, because we see again that there's greatness is attributed to the Creator, might and glory, and the Lord your God is in your midst, the mighty one who will save. So we're being told that the Creator will save us, but it makes it a little bit more difficult if we harden our heart and saying, well, as you said before, you know, let's blame the Creator. Let's say it's on him, not me. Your take on these matters.
Well, it's a two-way street. The Creator does his thing, but he wants you to do your thing. Both things are always in effect. The Creator never leaves us. But if we think we're changing, we got to go back to our mind and rely on what we believe in. Do you love the Creator? Are you against sin? Are you here on earth to do good? These are things that must be always be reminded from a human viewpoint, because we are not spiritual people. You're spiritual when you go to heaven. On earth, we're mortal. We make mistakes. We are not perfect. But everything ends. It can end, because the Creator keeps on going. He wants us to keep on going. He wants you to step over those little bumps in the road called problems with your feelings. And that's where Maimonides comes in saying, if you can't control your feelings, what are you going to do? You're going to follow your mind as though your mind is a feeling? No. We all know the difference between right and wrong. We all know that we were created by a creator. And that creator is with us till the end. And he's waiting. He wants to see what are your choices. Do you live up to your choices? Can you rely on him? Is there love in your heart? There's always love in our creator's heart. You may not feel it. You may not see it. You may not hear it. It has nothing to do with your feelings. It's your belief in our creator. And therein lies the fact that you must rely on it. It isn't a question of recognizing it. You can use it. It's there. Call for help. God, creator, is always there. If you don't call for help, that means you're independent. How far can you think you can go being independent? Sorry, we're all immortal beings on the planet Earth. We want to do better, or at least most of us do. And to do better means you have to have a strong love for God. God is always there. He loves you, and you should love him.
Thank you, Dennis. Before we go on to our next segment, we're going to start reading some verses and commentary on the prophet Daniel. My son shared with us today, and there is a website I'd like to heavily recommend to everyone to check out because, you know, we're more or less well aware of what's going on in the Middle East right now. And this channel is called Living, L-I-V-I-N-G, then L-C-H-A-I-M. And the interview is with a Loe al-Sharif. He is a proud Muslim, Arab, and he believes that Muslims and Jews can live in peace if hatred is shed. So I'd like to recommend that to everyone. I've already shared it on my Facebook page. Maybe, Dennis, I'll send it to you on your email. It's about a 52-minute interview, and he's very erudite, very positive, very truthful, and he understands human frailty. So hopefully this is the type of dialogue which is going to start to take over the dialogue because, you know, you were talking before, Dennis, emotions seem to become the intellect now. And there's actually a teaching by the Sixth Lubavitcher Rebbe is that what the emotions project the intellect to the exclusion of the original intellect that empowered those emotions, it's chaos. And that's what I think what we're seeing in the world right now, and that's what has so many concerned people like yourself, and I'd like to put myself in that category, is that we have chaotic viewpoints being shared all over the world, one way or the other. And I think it's high time that we internalize this whole idea that we mentioned last week, Moach Shalet Alalev, the heart, the mind by its intrinsic design, the brain is above the heart, it rules over it. But before the brain can rule over the heart, we've got to rule over our thought process. There are streams of thinking that are just constantly bombarding us, whether it be good, bad, or indifferent, somewhere in between, and there's many degradations of all these levels. So, Dennis, what can we do to get people to become more mindful of their divine image, which is their human intellect, as opposed to just paying homage to their emotions, which is just creating more chaos in the world?
Well, the word chaos comes from the Greek. And in English, we would say it's like turmoil. But that exists in all human brains.
Right.
Your intellect is always in turmoil to do good or bad. What are your choices? If you have too many choices, you end up in turmoil. Or maybe your intellect can't handle it. Maybe you feel like it's giving you a pain and you don't want to be bothered. I'm sorry. We are imperfect people. And we must deal with the turmoil. We must deal with our feelings. and we must line them up so that we follow something that's sensible, that will work in good times and in bad times. So we're not looking for secret sayings so that we'll feel good in bad times. No. We must always worry about not only what we've done in the past, but what we intend to do in the future. Because this turmoil can turn around and attempt to change your thinking, even though you thought you were on an even keel to begin with. Yes, some of us can congratulate ourselves because we think good and we don't make mistakes. Well, that's a falsehood. If you rely on your memory or your brain, you're getting away from God, because our Creator created us, and there's limitations there. He knows, Creator knows what we can and can't do. Do you know what your brain can and can't do? We must constantly have introspection of what we're doing, because how we know we're going to be doing the right thing tomorrow? Today you may feel good. Tomorrow your feelings may change. How can we level your feelings out if your mind is always in turmoil, chaos, or change? What can you rely on that doesn't change? Well, the answer is our Creator. Our Creator is. The Creator has no beginning, no end, and always will be. So why not place your faith or trust or belief in something that's not going to change? Everything on our planet Earth appears as though it could change. Sometimes in a moment, sometimes it takes a year. Sometimes it takes 10 years, 100 years. But if you rely on something that doesn't change, you have a better chance of living your future the way you want to. That's your choice. Your choice. Take your pick. But you must live with it then. Yes. God will allow you to change your mind. He doesn't care. He loves you, and you should love him.
Amen. Thank you, Dennis. Now we're going to turn to, we originally started, I think, chapter 2, verse 20 in the prophecies of Daniel. And at first I said this: Daniel had already interpreted the dream of the king. And then it says he didn't have the dream yet. But so I figured let's go back to the beginning of chapter 2, because I think a lot of people are fascinated by the book of Daniel, because there's a lot of hidden teachings here, and we're not going to reveal all the teachings because we have not access to all those teachings ourselves. However, what we will see is what unfolded at the in the very beginning of the reign of the King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon, when after he had destroyed the first temple of Israel, which had stood about 400 years. So we'll go right into the verses and some of the oral Torah traditions of it, and we'll turn to Dennis, of course, for feedback and comments and concerns. So in the second, this is chapter 2, verse 1. In the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams. His spirit was agitated, and his sleep was interrupted. So when it mentions the second year of his reign, this is the second year after he had given the orders to destroy the Holy Temple in Jerusalem. And that there is a certain difficulty in placing the occurrence of his dreams in the second year of his reign, because we find Daniel interpreting his dream, but Daniel didn't stand before the king until the end of his third year of training. What happened was, the youth of the tribe of Judah were taken to Babylon to train them to become more worldly, to become more accepting of the Babylonian ways, because if they did, that would sway the people to leave their Torah observance. So in the second year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign, means that the second year was direct reign over Judah and Jerusalem. Previously, he had ruled Judah through regents, Jehoiakim, who was actually a Jew. And then Arbanel adds that the year of the destruction of the temple, Nebuchadnezzar was not a king on a global scale. In that year, he conquered many other nations, and this was prophesied in the book of Jeremiah, chapter 27, verses 1 through 9, and in the second year of the global reign of Nebuchadnezzar. And this is commented by Malbim and Al-Sheikh. However, Rabbi Sadia, who was from the 800-900 years ago, that this dream kept on reoccurring to Nebuchadnezzar after he saw it in the second year of his reign. So he, by this time, he was aroused to convene all of his wise men, and at that point, Daniel was already standing in front of the king. Now, Nebuchadnezzar saw this dream several times, and we're now reading in the Torah portion that Paro, in the time of Joseph, dreamed two dreams. One was seven cows that were robust, were grazing in a marsh, and then seven very thin cows came and ate them up. And then there were seven sheaves of wheat, or stalks of wheat, that were standing erect. And then seven stalks of wheat came and eradicated them. And Joseph, in the book of Genesis, interpreted the doubling of Paro's dream as a sign that God will shortly bring it to pass. But this interpretation does not apply here, because Nebuchadnezzar's dream anticipated the establishment of kingdoms and that would influence the history of mankind until the coming of the Messiah. So I think this is what will perk up people's interest, Dennis, is that we're talking about prophecies that are relevant to this day. So nevertheless, since part of the dream at least included or alluded to Nebuchadnezzar as the first of these kingdoms, it was clearly beginning to come to pass immediately. So Dennis, I don't know how deeply people look into the scripture, but there's a lot of things going on here. And also just to add that Nebuchadnezzar, where it says his spirit was agitated, meaning he was frightened and disquieted because he saw that this was not an idle dream, but a premonition of things to come. Now, generally speaking, in our generation, we don't put so much importance on dreams as they're sort of like a test to see if we can go through with what we are planning consciously in the day. And these things are just a matter of, they're heavenly matters. I mean, there are certain interpretations I won't get into why they take place. But the point is, Dennis, here is a very powerful king in the Middle East, or the Levant, some would say, because Babylon is, I think, also called the Levantine or the Levant. And he was very agitated because he saw the future. Why would seeing the future agitate him, Dennis?
Well, yeah, a twofold question here, Don. One is, how much faith can you put in your dreams? Because from a human viewpoint, your dreams only occur at night when you're not dealing with reality. Reality means you're awake and you're sensing, all your senses and your mind is alert to the things that you can see, hear, do, smell, taste, etc. That is what we call reality. Think you can see the future. Do you have complete faith in it? Now, if you believe God, our creator, is feeding you these ideas, that's one thing. But if you think you are creating them and you understand them, but you're not too sure how it fits into the world, is that a disturbance that's really a reality? No, because it occurs in your dreams. So what happens is that some people who have wild and crazy dreams because they're not controlled. They're not controlled because they're not dealing with reality. Reality takes up a huge portion of your brain. Your creative process and your flowing creative juices are hard at work when the minute you go to sleep because you shut down reality. Now it's what happens as it bounces around in your brain. Can you predict the future? Is there a future? What can you believe in? Again, this is another thing that is variable. It can change. And you shouldn't really be too worried about if another human can't explain it because they weren't thinking that dream. You were. But, you must have faith in our Creator and what He has done and what we should be doing. And that is using our mind to the best of our ability. So if we have a dream, we must be able to verify that with reality, or else, poof, if you want a dream that will go up in smoke, fine. You can have many dreams and everything. But there are some people saying, wait a minute, if I thought about it, maybe it's a reality. Maybe it can happen. We can put maybe in front of many, many, many things. Do we live with maybes? No. We make choices. And that is why God has given us a brain, and we have free will to decide what we want to. But we must remember that we are humans and we're prone to error. We are not perfect. So why would you think that your dreams talk about the future of perfection when humans, strictly humans on the human, non-spiritual side, come up with some ideas? We always handle ideas, but will ideas turn into reality? We don't know till we step into the future. And that's when you wake up for the next day. Where are your dreams? You don't live by your dreams. You don't depend on God for your dreams. You depend on your mind to be controlled to a certain extent. But we don't have much control when we close our eyes because we're shutting out reality. So our mind is very creative. The devil loves it. The devil can come up with 50 million ideas, more than you can handle in a second. And that's where we sometimes forget that we are humans in the service of our Creator, in the service of the devil, who will take advantage when our guard is down, when we go to sleep. Our moral standards still stand. They don't vary. They don't change. But if you think your dreams is going to change reality, sorry, it doesn't work that way. What God has thought of and will happen, and it is our plan, will happen regardless of your dreams. God is the primary force here on earth. We want to be in sync with his spiritual world of heaven. To do that, we must live within the parameters that we know what is reality, optimistic thinking, good thinking, and should we go along with some crazy idea. Some ideas prove to be not so crazy, but we don't find that till you put them into reality and try them and test them out with people. We're always looking to better ourselves, but there are limits to that betterment. If you are already living a good life, can you live a better than good life? Creator is happy if you are a good person. You think good thoughts and you stay away from as many bad thoughts as possible. Of course. But there's room still for you to make decisions. And those decisions are your choice with the free will. God has faith in you. Have faith in yourself.
Amen. Thank you, Dennis. So we're going further. So you mentioned that Nebuchadnezzar was bothered. So he consulted with his wise men. And chapter 2, verse 2 is going to delineate who were his wise men before the onset and the arrival of Daniel to interpret his dreams, or his dream successfully. So chapter 2, verse 2, then the king had necromancers, those who communicate with the dead, the astrologers, stargazers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans called to tell the king his dreams. They came and stood before the king. So let's look at these individual categories. The necromancers, I guess, as I mentioned before, these are those who communicate for the dead to get secrets, the astrologers, stargazers, an understanding of the movement of the planetary bodies. As far as the sorcerers are concerned, these are people who have the ability to make changes in nature. And the question by the sages of Israel, if this type of manipulation of nature, whether it be an illusionary or an actual change, is included on the Torah, is totally against the practice of magic. that's a discussion for another time. And then the Chaldeans are basically, they were a very particular nation which practiced astrology, and the Chaldeans were very, very well taken up with this wisdom. However, that since astrology was the main branch of knowledge amongst the ancient Chaldeans, who had greatly fathered the related sciences of astronomy and astrology, modern archaeology has unearthed considerable evidence that points to their proficiency in both of these disciplines. Therefore, the Chaldeans have the title of the Chaldean astrologers. So the king felt that his team of wizards, all claiming knowledge of the future through their temporary powers, should be able to relate what had already taken place within his mind. But their inability to do so proved to the king that their whole art was built upon deceit, and now he wanted to execute all of them. Now, it doesn't mention whether or not Daniel and his companions were called to interpret the king's dreams, because that apparently Daniel was not aware of the fact that Nebuchadnezzar had requested of his personal sages to interpret his dreams. So he wasn't present when this happened. It seems stranger that when the Almighty tested them, meaning Daniel and his companions, he found them to be 10 times better than the necromancers. And this was during a period of a 3-year learning period allotted for these descendants of the tribe of Judah. Now, when this episode took place, Daniel had already been recognized as excelling over all other sages. So the Alshik, oratorial commentator, advances two possible reasons why Daniel's companions were not called with the sages. The king called only sages who had already proven themselves by experience. So even if one academically can be proven to be a superior student, without application, that's something I want to talk about, Dennis, how sometimes we turn for people who have a lot of knowledge but don't have experience in rendering proper advice or guidance or empowerment. And despite of this, Daniel and his companions were very brilliant, they lacked practical experience. And Daniel and his companions only demonstrated their superiority only in the matters of reasonings, which is no use for telling the king his forgotten dream. So Dennis, this is a very important point. We have very intelligent people, and we have an intellectual mindset, and some of these people are considered to be social engineering, that they're postulating ideas of how to improve society, but with no practical experience on how to implement these ideas, rather than just take ideas and sprinkle them out into the creation and see how they do it, as opposed to the first Chabad Rebbe of Shneur Zalman wrote a seminal work called Tanya, and they said that how was he able to write a book of advice on how to serve God and have the fellowship with other people based on the practical experiences which an allegory was given which made the soil of his mind very fertile to give such advice. So then as you're taking this idea that while the wise men of King Nebuchadnezzar could not interpret his dream correctly, he was not going to just, you know, on the moment, on a whim, call out to Daniel and his companions who were training for 3 years to become added to the number of sages of Babylon because they had no practical experience. Can you talk about this, the difference between knowledge and practical experience, and how we have to encourage people, once they get all the knowledge, see how they can implement it into practical experience?
No matter what your imagination says, there's always right and wrong. You must stick with what you believe is right and wrong. We cannot deviate from that. That was something, the principles that were established a long time ago. In history, we see what is right and what is wrong. Whatever we do, we must measure it up against right or wrong. That does not mean that excludes imagination, because we can be very clever and smart. That doesn't mean we're wise and knowledgeable. So we have a need for practical experience in the sense that we can keep up our right and wrong rules. The right and wrong rules is what gives us substance to know that when we go to sleep and we wake up, the rules of right and wrong that we've created in our mind that we're committed to are not changing. People today, you have great imagination and they want to have heroes of the universe. They don't even mention God, but they talk about heroes of the universe. Is that their imagination gone wild? Where is the right and the wrong? We can be imaginative and creative, but we cannot lose sight of the fact we must live within the laws and rules that the Creator has established for the earth, and that we can aspire to the rules and regulations that we believe that is heaven. That is where the Creator resides. Maybe lives, if you want to use that word, but he doesn't live. He's not a human. He or she, the Creator, is not a human. So we got to be careful with our imagination, because we usually try to extend our human thinking into our imagination, and therefore it gives it more credence as to what's there. Why? Because it is my idea. Your idea is meaningless unless it can be accepted by our Creator. Good and evil is still the dividing line between your choices in life and your daily workings that you do. We must not give in to our imagination and give up reality. Reality is our way of living. Deviate. Good and bad will always be there. Just because somebody has an imagination, that doesn't mean that they're inventing the new good or bad. No. History has shown we are humans who are bound to repeat ourselves as long as we're aware of what is good and right. Good and evil is a fence that will always be there. You can reword it, reimagine it any way you want, especially if you use dreams or imagination that goes on and on. No, we all have to wake up in the morning and deal with reality. And the reality is there's always going to be good and bad. Both turmoil, do you have control over that? Or are you going to use your feelings to make a decision? Or are you going to ask your friends which is the best way to go? Sometimes you have to make your own decision because it's your own life. We don't ask friends to describe what our life is going to be about. You rely on God. God is the best friend you can find, and we must always remember that.
Thank you, Dennis. So now we're going to turn to the book of Proverbs, chapter 3, verse 7. And it kind of connects with the fact that Daniel and his companions were not asked to yet interpret the dreams of King Nebuchadnezzar. Because King Solomon says this, chapter 3, verse 7, do not be wise in your own sight. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. So Matsuda David, who is a interpreter of the oral Torah tradition, do not be wise in your own sight so to decide that you may be lenient in the case of a forbidden act, that you do not need to impose safeguards upon yourself, because a wise man like you finds them unnecessary. Rather, fear the Creator, lest you stumble despite your wisdom, and turn away from evil by enacting safeguards for yourself. Now, something I learned many years ago, Dennis, is that, again, the first Chabad Rebbe, Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi, said, don't offer advice when it's not being asked for. It can cause a lot of problems. And for self or personal advice, one should not be so sure of oneself. As I learned the hard way concerning the expression of my trust in the Almighty, King David also asked to be tested, and he felt, with the test of Bathsheba, which is a whole different discussion. We won't go into it, but people can do their own research, look in the Tanakh, the book of Samuel, and the oral Torah traditions. So we have to be careful not to extend out our self-perception of our own wisdom, because we could lead people astray, and how much more so we can lead ourselves astray. Because when we lead others astray, we're actually leading ourselves astray. Dennis, you're taking this idea that a person shouldn't be too wise in their own sight. But part of that is, if they don't have the practical experience, how do we implement the wisdom into practical action?
Well, we have a tried and true method of asking for our Creator's help. And that is called prayer. If you have any doubts to yourself, your mind, your thinking, you can always say a prayer or two. And believe it or not, you may get some help. It may come in various different ways. We don't know how it comes, but God will not turn us down. He will not look the other way in our time of need. So even though you may not see the immediate results, you are getting help from God. You may have a hard time figuring out what that help is because it didn't turn into money. I didn't get enough money. Was it money was the problem, or was that your imagination taking over and saying what the real problem is? You must rely on your Creator to help you to understand what the problems are. But the resolution to those problems also must be in the real world between good and bad and your mind as you believe in the principles of what you're living your life. You cannot go against your own principles. Why? Because that's like committing suicide. You want to give up your life for nothing, on a dream, on a bet, on a words from a friend? No. You are your own boss. Act like it. Make the decisions. Keep up the difference between good and evil. And stay on a straight and narrow path, and you will find heaven. There's not many people that can do that. Why? Because we're always having choices. And sometimes those choices get us confused. We make the wrong choice. So what? We can make a new choice and replace it with a better one. We always have hope. We must have hope. And the future relies in following God, our Creator.
Thank you, Dennis. We're going further. So, segueing from chapter 3, verse 7 to chapter 3, verse 8 in Mishlei Proverbs. So this fear of Creator and avoiding becoming wise in one's own sight and turning away from evil, King Solomon wants to know that there is something that's going to be activated, a healing process. It shall be healing for your navel and marrow for your bones. Now, marrow for your bones, moisture, meaning that Creator will grant a person health and strength to those who fear him. And that's the quotation of Rabbeinu Yonah. So the David explains that the safeguards he imposes upon himself will strengthen him in his observance of the commandments, which is another primary matter of importance, that the way we correct to the Creator is not to be wise in our own eyes and we should actively turn away from evil, but we should do something in the positive to try to fulfill his commandments, whether it be charity, brotherly love, sisterly love, you know, helping those in need, not necessarily monetarily, but verbally and emotionally. And moving on to chapter 3, verse 9, honor the Creator from your substance and the first of all your grain. What's going on here? Meaning, if a person senses a sense of gratitude towards the bounty one has given. Now, again, this is referring specifically according to the Torah, according to the agricultural laws of separating one's produce. Today, generally speaking, from the rabbinical decrees, is that when we give charity or tzedakah, we're giving from our financial assets. So a person, say, like, hypothetically speaking, like $500 a month, $500 a week, and he gets paid every 2 weeks, he gets $1,000, and his expenses are deducted, say, I don't know, another $300, that's $700. So it would be upon that person to make a decision to give either $70 and up or maybe a little bit less because they're tight, they have unexpected expenses. So also as well that in the tithing process that part of it was taken to Jerusalem to impurity, but every third year the second tithe must be given to the poor who may eat it anywhere and need not to preserve its purity. So here you see that a person who is honoring the Creator with their substance by giving it for charity should not be surprised that they will be blessed continually. And this is something that a lot of people struggle with. Some people give a lot of tzedakah. Some people, they give money away as if it was their life, meaning they're very hesitant to give it away. But then it's so the idea of honoring the Creator with your substance and the first of all your grain, this is a very important point, meaning our first effort should be, I mean, our intent in doing good is that from the goodness that we can bring into the world, it be for the sake of our first efforts, our first intent, our first speech, first action is for the sake of the glory of the Creator. We take of these matters.
Well, since we're not perfect, our efforts sometimes can be mistaken. We sometimes will make the wrong choices. But the one thing that we have that can be used at any time is recovery. We can recover from it. If you believe in what you were doing was really good, but you made a bad decision, things are self-correctable. You can correct it. Other people may give you some advice on that correction. A government may not believe in you made a mistake, and you may have to pay for it. That's the way the ball bounces, but you knew that ahead of time. None of that was hidden from you. You know what the consequences are. The biggest consequence is you don't go to heaven. That is really serious. But it would be nice to have everybody fearful of that. But sometimes some people don't think, or they don't think they can fear that. You fear that you make the wrong choice. That's a good fear. You know how to avoid it. You know how to recover from it. You know how to correct it. Those are overpowering concepts that keep us going in life. Know that you have the power to recover. All is not lost because you make one mistake. God, the Creator, will forgive you under any circumstances as long as you're pure of heart. So, the choices are there. The rules are set. You must now live them. You cannot change them from day to day. You are stuck with them. But sometimes being stuck with them is a good thing, because some people forget and they don't realize what world they're living in. Our Creator always has open arms. He will always forgive us as long as we're good of heart. So, make your choices and live your life.
Thank you, Dennis. We'll turn to one last verse. And believe it or not, we're coming to the end of another program. And it goes slowly, but it seems to go so quickly, you know, paradoxically. So chapter 3, verse 10 in the book of Proverbs, and your barns, I mean, this is all allegory because not too many of us have barns these days, and your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. So the Mitzvah David, another great commentator on the Oral Torah tradition, that a person who gives truma or tithes, in this case in the ancient days to the Kohanim, the Levites, and the poor, that the Almighty will send his blessing upon your produce and it will increase dramatically. And the Midrash, which is from the Oral Torah tradition as well, relates instances of people who were prosperous as long as they separated the tithes properly and suffered calamities when they failed to do so. And in terms of the vats, that now wine is also from the inner dimension of Torah is considered to be the secrets, meaning your vats, meaning your left, right, and back brain will be overflowing with new insights, secrets which you might have thought were totally inaccessible will now start to flow through your mind because you're filled with good thoughts, you're filled with good speech, you're filled with good actions. You're helping those in need of your community. You're helping someone who might live across the other side of the world. So it shouldn't surprise you that various parts of your conscious, cognitive thinking is now opening up to new ideas because you're opening up in the worlds to other people. Dennis, your take on these matters.
Yes. To be open-minded is that you're going to get to heaven by whatever means you can. To do that, you must be open-minded. Open-minded, you know how to pass off evil, how to avoid evil, how to avoid those things that will drag you down and your principles with it. It's almost like getting flushed in the toilet. You only want the stuff that is bad to be flushed in the toilet. Put any good stuff in there. You know what you're doing. So therefore, live a good life. You will be rewarded. The reward may come in funny ways, different ways, odd ways, God's ways. That doesn't mean you get more money. That doesn't mean you get extra desserts for dinner or whatever meal you're eating. The reward is you're going to go to heaven. That's our long-term goal, but we must remember to use our short-term standards against that long-term goal of going to heaven. We will be rewarded if we're good, but that reward may not be put in your hand or your pocket. Doesn't forget. He knows all. So even though you don't feel satisfied from the good that you do, God records it. He will account for it. Have faith in your Creator, and you will live a better life.
Thank you, Dennis. I'd like to thank you for joining us this past hour. And we're going to segue out with a song we played on several occasions, When You Believe by the Maccabees, talking about faith. And unfortunately, the fact that people have to leave this world under certain conditions, and yet we have to stay strong. But again, before we segue out, I want to mention to everyone again, please go to a YouTube channel called Living Chaim, Living L'Chaim, L-I-V-I-N-G, in capital L, then C-H-A-I-M, meaning Living for Life, with an interview with Loay Al-Sharif, who is from the Middle Eastern country of UAE. I think that's the United Arab Emirates, if I'm not mistaken. And he was very passionate about disdain for those who hate, and is equally, he has a great passion for the unity of the Jewish and the Muslim people. And if we can see from this pocket of the world, even if it's come from UAE, hopefully bring many blessings in a way of Ahav Achad, one love, Goral Achad, one destiny, Kolano for all of us, but Darchim Darchim, a peaceful, pleasant way. I want to remind everyone, you should never feel that you're disappointed, that you've been anointed with the Tzelem Elohim. Your divine image will help you get scrimmaged to make it a better world, that all the 8 billion, almost 100 million, engage in this process of eliminating hatred, jealousy, and competition, which is not needed, and this world will be a fitting abode for the universal redemption, where secrets and Ruach HaKodesh will be revealed, divine inspiration and the Ruach of prophecy and the spirit of prophecy will be pouring upon all those who want to seek out God with an earnestness and with a truthfulness and a love of humanity, love of Creator, love of the creation. So here we go. When You Believe by the Maccabees. Week.
I'm too proud of you.